Welcome to a new episode of BFRR, our Bitcoin, Fiat, and Rock and Roll podcast that explores the intersection of traditional finance, digital assets, and digital money, and helps you understand how digital assets and money will evolve in the future. I'm co-host Jonas Groß, and today I'm joined by Floris Lucht and Jan Lebbe, the co-heads digital assets of ING Wholesale Banking, but they are not just with ING. They serve as representatives of the stablecoin initiative of 9 major European banks from 9 countries. You might have heard about this in our podcast or in the media already before, which is, of course, ING, Banca Sella, KBC, Danske Bank, DK Bank, UniCredit, SEB, CaixaBank, and Raiffeisen Bank International. So big crowd of very reputable European banks. And this is also what we will discuss today. So first, welcome to you, Floris and Jan. It's really a great pleasure to have you here with us today.
Thank you. Great to be here.
Pleasure is ours.
Awesome. I appreciate that. So what we will cover today is we will discuss basically your stablecoin initiatives in detail. So I think the initiative had, from my perspective, a really massive public traction in the media. At least, I mean, I remember the days when you posted the announcement that everybody was talking about it. So this has also got us, of course, very curious to understand a little bit more. And that's exactly what we want to do in this episode today. Go a little bit deeper on how this all came, what the goals are, maybe also how you differentiate and just understand a little bit more on your approach. So maybe let's get started, at looking at ING first. So how basically did, let's say, the general blockchain journey at ING Bank look like in the past years? Maybe you can also shed a little bit on light on when this journey started, which initiatives, just to get a little bit of a feeling where this was coming from.
Yeah, I can start, as I was at the blockchain team at ING since the start in 2016, when there was a reach out of our global head of payments to all ING employees with the ask who was interested to explore the potential of blockchain technology. So then we formed a whole team existing out of developers and initiative leads, which were linked towards the various business lines that could be impacted or benefit from this new blockchain technology, like trade finance, financial markets, collateral payments. The latter I was myself. I was the initiative lead of payments on DLT then. And like this, ING was involved in many initiatives. We were spread around the whole blockchain space. Almost all trade finance initiatives we were part of, Contour, Marco Polo, Komgo, HQLAX. It was our blockchain team that started building the platform.
Oh, nice.
The current CTO was an ING developer at that time. And then Finality, we were an active participant there. I was steer co-member, still a board observer there. So we're active in many things. But yeah, as you know, the Gartner hype cycle of blockchain moved from peak to inflated expectations towards true of disillusionment. So also our blockchain team followed this path a little bit. Various initiatives failed. People moved to function outside the entity or outside the blockchain space. And then based to this, we also had a more like back to basic strategy of our new CEO. So also the blockchain team had more like a back to basic strategy or digital asset strategy, focusing on the key components that a bank should build to service our clients. And that was a little bit maybe also how our stablecoin project started.
Yeah, and it's really interesting to always see. I mean, this has been almost 10 years, right? So often for people, it seems, a bank is setting up a project team and then 1 year later you have a stablecoin. And I guess this perception really is not true, right? It takes longer. You have the hype cycle. You need to build up a team. You have all the business lines that may be impacted, which I guess is most of the banks potentially, right? So it's interesting how these journeys do develop within banks. How was it then basically that this idea of a joint, of a stablecoin came up? First question, also of a joint stablecoin, because of course, having a lot of parties involved is always good when you think about distribution, but always, a lot of cooks cooking at the table can also make things very complicated. So how did this idea come up? And maybe also when was this?
Yeah, maybe. So if I tell the story from an ING perspective, about 3.5 years ago, our board made a request to develop a more holistic digital asset strategy. So already there were many impactful initiatives ongoing, but it was also based on experimentation basis. And now that the request was, what is the holistic strategy there? And what we recognized at the time, and at the time I was not a digital asset expert, but I was involved or responsible for innovation activities within the treasury department and worked with Jan, for example, on HQLA, or HQLAX. But there we recognized that still our clients were not benefiting sufficiently from all the opportunities that blockchain brings. And why is that? Well, our analysis was that certain standards were missing that make it difficult for the ecosystem to get together and develop new solutions because then you need to agree first on the standards. And one of these standards was a common and trusted means of payment. And then if you look at the options there, one, of course, if you talk about issuance of money, and here you talk about issuance of money, it's just a new technology, then you first look at the central bank. And ECB is, of course, developing a digital euro, but the digital euro is not will not be issued on blockchain, most likely. So we wanted to focus specifically on the benefits that blockchain brings. ECB is also developing a wholesale CBDC. However, that is a settlement called central bank reserves. So that's interbank only. And so if you want to serve your clients in the corporate payment use cases or B2C or retail use cases, that's also not a suitable solution. So what can banks then do? Essentially, two types of instruments can be developed by banks. One is tokenized deposits. That is probably a very good digital payment instrument with many benefits. However, that is fairly difficult to develop because if, for example, if ING would issue a tokenized deposit, it would be an ING deposit still. So what's that back? So a tokenized deposit is just the deposits we have on our balance sheet today, right? But as soon as you want to make a payment, you tokenize it, which means you register a blockchain. So you can do that from ING. But then if we make a payment to another bank, whether that's KBC, Commerzbank, BNP Paribas, doesn't matter, then that bank receives an ING deposit and needs to convert it into a deposit of its own bank. That means already you need a platform where all these banks can talk to each other if you want to develop a wide network. Plus, we need to settle the underlying cash. This all can be done, and the underlying settlement can, for example, be done by a lossless CBDC. But it requires quite a few years of development also because you then need to integrate it into your own payment systems as individual bank. So that might take quite a few years. The final instrument that banks can develop is the stablecoin. And the stablecoin has a large benefit is that these instruments already exist, right? They are out there in the market. There's also a regulatory framework in Europe available through NICAR. The technology is not very new anymore. Many stablecoins have been developed already quite efficiently. So it's something that you can do relatively easily in a short period of time and therefore discover the market and hopefully serve clients already fairly soon.
Plus, you don't have the fungibility issue that you just mentioned with tokenized deposits, right? If you send something from bank one to B.
Exactly. So this we recognized and we set out to talk to other banks. And we noticed that there's a lot of like-minded ideas among other banks. So this was about 3 years ago. And we had in the beginning of 2023, we had a large workshop where 12 of the largest European or Eurozone banks, I should say, were gathered. And in this workshop, very quickly, everyone agreed, yes, banks should collectively develop a joint means of digital payments because that helps us to serve our clients and unlock the benefits of blockchain technology for our clients. So that was actually very easily arranged because there were a lot of banks were in agreement and were also thinking about these kind of ideas. The questions or the debate was more about so which instrument to focus on, so the instruments I was just discussing, which use cases to focus on, etc. But very quickly, it was agreed we need to work together to avoid this fragmentation and to set up this form of infrastructure that that we need, such that the banks can individually develop new products and services and compete on that front, but not on the underlying infrastructure.
And this timeline is very interesting because this was basically before now all the stablecoin topic went super hot, right? So 3 years ago, this was probably where most of the banks did not, besides the, you know, the one you gathered, did explore this seriously, I think.
Yeah. That was a little bit of a challenge, eh? Because you needed to not only convince the blockchain enthusiasts of the banks, which who we talked to, but those blockchain enthusiasts, those leads of digital assets, needed to convince also their management to say, okay, let's do this. Let's all on board this journey.
To get budget and people, right?
Yeah, not only explaining the benefit of blockchain, okay, that is not too difficult, but also explaining the benefits of stablecoins who are tokenized deposits, as Floris now clearly mentioned, and say, okay, let's invest time and money and effort in this. So yeah, at that time, market cap was 100 billion, I think. MiCAR was not yet in not yet in place. It was in draft. How do you see it? Fruits of stablecoin becoming mainstream was not there yet. So that did not help at that point in time. But the enthusiasm made it sufficient people to get on our journey.
Yeah, and I think this is really interesting and very, very relevant. So thanks for telling the journey how this all began, because what I also hear from you is that their key driver was also client demand, so that you basically said, look, there is all this stuff getting digital now, coming on blockchain tokenized, but this cash leg is missing. And as you said, Floris, this can be a wholesale CBD as well, potentially even a retail CBDC and also tokenized deposits. But this is all further down the road and also serves different use cases, as wholesale is, you know, more interbank, I guess. So yeah, I think this is also very important, so that you really build this for, and also I think it was important for your management to get an okay to proceed with that, if you have a clear business case in mind, and also know exactly that there's custom demand, right? And it's not just a research and development initiative that you want to set up between banks. I can imagine when you have all these bank stakeholders on the table, like how, let's say, frictionless were these discussions? Because there are probably a lot of different interests, different policies. It's also, I think, 9 different countries currently, right? So it's very different economies and everything. Like how easy was this in this whole process?
Well, the difficulty did not lie so much in different banking cultures or country cultures or anything like that. Just like Jan and I became responsible for this project and for digital payments in general within ING, we were speaking to similar departments, mostly within the other banks. If you speak to the other experts, there's very much alignment on what we needed to do. I mean, there's lots of discussions about details or about precise use cases or partners, etc. There's plenty of things to debate, but never really uncertainty about whether we should do this at all or whether this would be a good idea at all. So the difficulty that Jan already mentioned a bit was more, this is something very new, and approval for every bank needs to go all the way up to the board. So you need to make time and capacity available to even get this approval and get the approval itself, right? So that is just something that takes time, and banks need to prioritize over something else that is also important for the bank itself, for their clients. So the challenge was more, can we prioritize this collectively as bank consortium enough within our own banks to get these approvals, such that we can get every bank to invest and be able to move forward. And that has taken some time indeed, but that has been time well spent, I think, because like you mentioned before, 3 years ago, the world looked a bit different. Now we are further advanced. But the banks also needed this time to understand what these developments are, what you can then do with stablecoins, what kind of products you can offer, what kind of benefits the clients can then really have. And those debates, some banks are more advanced than others. But for the many banks that we've spoken to, this has also been a bit of a starting point to have that internal discussions within those banks, and really think about what they could develop and what they could offer and what it would really mean. So that has been going on, by the way, not thanks to us. This is a development that was ongoing already, but we've been helping a bit to drive that forward. And that is, I think, a large part of what has been happening over the past 3 years.
And I can really imagine this takes time, but it seems you made it. So congrats to this, because I really think it's not easy. A question that we are getting very, very often from the audience, because when we have our monthly news episodes, we always talk about stablecoins. You know, this player wants to issue a stablecoin, that player. And the question is always, do we now need another stablecoin, right? We do have a lot of stablecoins. We also do have a lot of, let's say, Euro stablecoins, you know, like the one from Circle, also all Unity issuing one with the consortium. So I would like to maybe ask this provocative question. So does it really need another stablecoin, or maybe to frame this question a little bit more politely, like what do you think is your USP or your right to win compared to other Euro stablecoins out there?
I think do we need another stablecoin? Not just another Euro stablecoin. I think we need a widely adopted stablecoin, a widely adopted Euro stablecoin, which the markets trust. Because let's face it, we have gone through a big evolution already. Stablecoins are now being used for remittances, for merchant payments, etc. But for stablecoins to become really mainstream, the market needs a stablecoin which they can trust. And that is something, and not only a stablecoin which the market can trust, but also other kinds of tools which they can trust, like custody wallets, etc. And I think that is our unique selling point, that we as banks offer this towards our clients, not only the stablecoin, but also the other kinds of services like custody wallets, yield-bearing assets, which the market needs because a stablecoin is not yield-bearing. I think that is the thing that the market needs, and that is also our unique selling point, to see this stablecoin not only as an end means, but as a utility for the banks to offer digital payments towards our clients, which the clients can use to solve the inefficiencies that they are seeing and which they are trying to solve with certain applications that they're forming. I talk to a lot of clients, to a lot of industry platforms, etc., and they all say, wow, not only a euro stablecoin issued by banks is something that that our clients would need, but definitely also the other services. So it's that trust layer next to, obviously, also the distribution network of the banks, because we do have a lot of clients, we do have a lot of reach. So that is something that that I think differentiates us a little bit from the other ones, and which is necessary for euro stablecoins to compete with US dollar stablecoins. Because that was also a little bit, to go back into the to the history, we saw the stablecoin market being dominated by US dollar stablecoins. We also saw the need for a strong euro answer towards that. So by providing this strong euro stablecoin, we do not only want to service our clients, facilitate innovation in the market, but also make sure that the euro remains relevant into the whole payment
so
space.
A broader mission, basically. So what you're saying, Jan, if I understood you correctly, is you say, I mean, it's not just another stablecoin. It's a stablecoin with a lot of power, let's say, networking distribution power behind, right? And this is something that you currently don't see in the market, let's say, from competitors, and something you can provide and bring to the table, besides the facilitation of other use cases. I really like that. So also serving your clients to take the stablecoins and do whatever they want with that, right? Build their value-added services on top.
Yeah, it's the power to talk to our clients that are seeing inefficiencies, that want to solve these and jointly create this. We do not need to focus on only the stablecoin, not only on the payment leg, but also on the wider industry, on other parties that solve inefficiencies. So that's what I think is our special
when
power.
We talk about inefficiencies, you know, the question directly comes to the use cases, right? So what is your current focus in terms of use cases that you aim to serve with the stablecoin?
Let's first say we see the whole digital asset eco-space as divided in three big pillars. On the one hand, you have the crypto space with crypto trading and DeFi. You have then the more TradFi space, the traditional financial transactions, cross-border payments, settlement of securities, and then more like the tokenized real-world assets with tokenized IP rights, tokenized energy, etc. We want to tackle all these kind of use cases. Just to be clear, we do not want to only be the crypto stablecoin. So we do see the need, obviously. So if you look at the whole stablecoin space, obviously crypto is a very, very important aspect of that space. But so we definitely want to be active in crypto trading, even in DeFi. But we see that also a bit as a means to an end. Because in order for your stablecoin to be efficient, also have FX spreads to interoperate with other currencies, the stablecoin needs to be liquid. So you need to have sufficient volumes, and with crypto trading and DeFi, you can definitely enable these. But as mentioned, our broader goal is to facilitate innovation by the wider industry and to help the wider industry with more the traditional financial transactions as well. And there, obviously, you have the cross-border payments, remittances, merchant payments, internal treasury payments, supply chain payments, programmable payments. So there's a big advantage to gain due to the blockchain technology. And we're talking with various parties, various applications, also with various other currency consortia. Settlement of tokenized securities. You need a payment leg on chain to enable atomic swap to reduce settlement risk. So definitely also we're talking to various tokenized securities platforms. And then obviously also the settlement of other forms of tokenized assets, IP rights and energy in the music industry and et cetera. Yeah, that are definitely also use cases that where we see us play a role.
Good to add to that. Good to explain and understand the model that we envision. So the bank consortium, the bank shareholders, will be shareholders of a company that will be dedicated to the issuance of the stablecoin, an e-money institution, an EMI. That is the company that we are developing right now. And that EMI will be focused fully on the issuance of the stablecoin. And that stablecoin will be designed to be a general means of on-chain payment for whatever use case you want to use it for. The issuer will not be in the driving seat or develop use cases. It will initially, but it will not have direct client interaction. It will always have banks or other licensed CUSPs as intermediaries, and they will have the client relationship, and they will therefore also determine what kind of use cases they want to offer for their clients. So as issuer and as consortium, we want to prioritize certain use cases because we need to, you know, go to market strategy, we need to go live at some point. But ultimately, it's not up to the issuer or the consortium to decide what use cases there will be for this stablecoin. That's up to the banks and CUSPs to decide.
I think that's super interesting. That's super interesting. So that you basically say this issuer only like presses the button when there is demand for issuance, right? So only does the issuance, and the use cases are driven by the consortia banks, obviously, and also by other banks and other CUSPs that just integrate this into their use cases. So I think that's really interesting in terms of distribution and on your approach as well. How do you see the like cooperation with the markets? Because there are obviously a lot of stablecoin issuers there. There are a lot of companies in the space when it comes to payment processing, like Stripe, for example, who's in, you know, into this, entering this game now. We also know that PayPal, MasterCard, Visa dedicated the stablecoin topic as core of their strategy. You know, how do you see yourself cooperating with these players? Or do you see yourself cooperating at all?
You need to make sure that when a party in Europe uses your stablecoin to send to somebody on the other side of the world in Latin America or something like that, or in Asia, and the one is using an Ethereum address, the other one is using a Solana address, that both parties can connect. So from that point of view, we definitely see the need to cooperate with other stablecoin issuers as well. We are in close contact with issuers in Asia, also in Latin, to make sure that that if a bank sends this stablecoin towards another bank's client, that they can connect, that they can meet, for example, travel rule information, that they can execute a VIX in a very efficient way. So we are talking with other banks, with other consortia, also with other market players. From an VIX point of view, from a travel rule point of view, various parties can play a role. Also, the PSP is currently play an orchestrating role in the current payment space. They are positioning themselves to also play a role in the stablecoin space, the likes of Bridge, etc. So definitely, we are talking to them because connectivity, it is a global play, the stablecoin market, and connectivity from one area to the other is important. So it would be totally wrong to only look at ourselves. You need to reach out to various players into the market that both can contribute.
And this strategy also clearly shows that you are also looking into the use cases outside the euro area, right? So, or where you said, you know, this is not just a chance for ING and for the consortium, but for whole Europe to foster the role of the euro if you consider these cross-border, cross-currency use cases as well, right?
Yeah, foster the role of the euro. So it is nowadays seen a bit sometimes as a battle of using the euro versus US dollar. And it's something, of course, we do promote that our clients are not dependent on US dollar or stablecoins or other currencies. But yeah, to us, that's only natural, right? So we have European clients who receive income in euros and want to do their spending and their transactions also in euro. So if this is a new innovative payment means that unlocks a wide range of new use cases and opportunities, then of course we need to have that available in euro. That's mostly how we see it. It also helps the strategic autonomy angle, which is a very important policy objective for the European Commission and the ECB. So not to be dependent on non-European players. So our initiative contributes to that as well. We support that very much, the principle, but it's not in the outset what we intend to do. So we intend to make a new provide new opportunities for our clients. And of course, we think it makes a lot of sense that it's European players that provide this service for European clients.
So these strategic autonomy angles then more like a byproduct, let's say, that results from the fact that you're serving client needs with your stablecoin. Let's now dive a little bit more deeper into your timeline. So I think if I remember this correctly, you made the announcement on this consortium, I think, in September. And I think in there it stated that you aim to launch in the second half of 2026. Did I get this right? Or maybe you can also illustrate some of the steps in between. So what are you currently working on? I guess, licensing, legal entity setup, hiring, or how does this look like?
It's correct what you say. So currently, we are very busy with the development of the new company that we are setting up, which means indeed hiring management and staff, which is, of course, a very important activity there. We are developing the tech platform in the meantime. We had started doing that already before the summer. So the shareholder agreement was signed in September. But before that, we were already collaborating with the consortium to take the initial steps. We are also developing the risk management framework, which is essential to apply for the EMI license that we need to have. In addition, we are doing other activities like we need the name, we need branding. We are hiring a supervisory board, which we need. So all the steps that you normally do to just set up a new company, it will be a fintech, right? That we are setting up, that we are doing right now. We do think that it can be done fairly quickly, so that about a year from now, or perhaps even a bit sooner, we will be able to go live. So somewhere during the second half of 2026, maybe.
Yeah, maybe also important to say is that that we do not do this by ourselves. It's we're indeed building the tech, the tech infrastructure, for example, but we also want to further experiment. We are reaching out to clients, towards potential partners to experiment, to do proof of concepts. In the last couple of years, we already issued our stablecoin on the likes of Ethereum, Polygon, Solana, etc. We plan to continue to do this and to test our stablecoin, to add certain features which our clients want. So definitely before the go live, we will have already experimented sufficiently with our stablecoin and providing it to our various parties.
Do you already know on which platform to issue the stablecoin? So I think always, like for all Unity, it was also starting on, I think, Ethereum and then rolling out in more chains month by month. Do you already know that, or is this something that comes later when you did the risk model, the license, and it's a little bit early?
It will not be an exotic platform that nobody has heard of. I don't think there will be too many many surprises there.
Okay. I think if you watch the other stablecoin issuers closely, it's always a very similar pattern. And yeah, would surprise me if you would pick an exotic one. But let's see. We can invite you back when you launch then next year on that. So also, Floris, from understanding your process developing the risk framework, you did like some of experimentation, you also built the tech in the back. And then I guess, you also have to apply formally for the EMI license. I think you said you did do this with an entity out of the Netherlands, right?
Yeah, that's correct. So the EMI will be based in the Netherlands. Yes. So the regulator will be the DNB, Dutch Central.
So you also expect that this process of getting the license will be smoothly then, right? So I'm just asking you because I, of course, from Germany, just have experience with German BaFin, how long specific things take, and sometimes it's quicker, sometimes it's less quick. I guess you're already in touch with the regulator, and it's also not a surprise what they will get on the table, or
no,
you can share some insights there.
They are aware, of course. Will it then be smooth? Well, that's to be seen, of course. That is the objective.
Yep.
We know the DNB as quite a tough regulator. So they will not go easy on us, I'm quite sure. And rightly so, because one of the key elements of the stablecoin is that it needs to be 100% trusted by the users. That's the only way it will be used. That's the only way in which clients will want to use the stablecoin for their payments. That also, we benefit there from a good regulator that is strict about the legal regulatory requirements that are out there. So we spend a lot of time and effort now in preparing that. And the process of developing a risk framework is not just something you do for the license, of course. It will be developed further going forward, but it's certainly one of the focus areas right now. And then, yeah, we will work closely together with DNB to make sure that it meets their requirements. And within the foreseeable future, they will be able to provide.
How did you come up with the conclusion to choose the Netherlands or the DNB as a regulator? Because obviously you have nine banks, so you have nine opportunities for what to do and where to base your legal entity. How come that you choose the Netherlands?
The Netherlands had a few advantages. One, it has quite a well-developed financial sector. That applies to other countries as well, of course, but it's also one advantage of the Netherlands. Also, the payment sector is quite well developed. Like I mentioned, there is a regulator that is known to be quite strict, but also quite fair. And that out of ING, we already had quite a good relationship with. We also thought it could be a benefit, you know, that Netherlands is typically fairly politically neutral. So you want to, with a large consortium, you want to avoid that there is one country more benefiting than another country, for example. So a more medium-sized country could be beneficial there. So in the end, we landed on the Netherlands with a good financial sector and a good, also highly educated workforce. But we could have chosen another country as well, as long as it would be somewhere within the EU. This could fit.
Okay. Yeah, and I think it's interesting which approach you choose here, because I think also for Allunity, they also choose, you know, like BaFin, like as a regulator, to get also this German stamp to say, look, this is a tough regulator, we made it. And I think for you, it's then very similar to say also for the DNB, it's a rather tough regulator. So it's a really good sign if you get the license and if you get this stamp from the DNB. Of course, we currently do see that every bank is now looking into stablecoin, or at least saying publicly that they are looking into stablecoins. So I'm really curious to see how many more stablecoins we will see in the next couple of years. Is it also possible still for interested players in Euro stablecoins to join your consortia? And if so, do you need to come from a different country because you have nine different countries? Or what's your approach on the country?
Yeah. We want to make this obviously a whole European initiative. Eh? So in the end, we want to create a utility which is backed by as many banks as possible, by as many countries as possible. So as you, if you map all the various banks towards the European map, then a couple of countries are still missing. So definitely, we would want to invite many more banks to join at a certain point in time. Although we really want to focus now also on getting the stablecoin live to make sure that we meet the timelines which we have met for ourselves and which are quite tight.
Before we go into wrapping up this this episode, one more question on infrastructure, because you mentioned in the beginning, Jan, that you contributed to a lot of different initiatives on blockchain. You know, you started working on this with ING 2016. You did a lot of permission projects on permission blockchains like Marco Polo and others. And currently, I have the feeling it's still a debate like where the future of money will lie, right? Will it be permissionless? Will it be stable coins? Will everything be interoperable, all open system? Or will this rather be on permission DLTs, permission tokenized deposits, and maybe also for other use cases? And, you know, what's your perspective here? Because I think some initiatives, as you said, Jan, they did not succeed. And I'm also rather skeptical when it comes to permissioned infrastructures, to be honest, because we've seen in the past that most of them, at least from my outside perspective, did not succeed. But what's your perspective? You worked on them. So what do you think? How this will the future look on permissioned versus permissionless infrastructures?
So first of all, we want to issue our stablecoin on all the platforms where there's a demand, where there's an added value, where there's a business case. And that can be both on permissions and on permissionless blockchains. So we think we will issue in the next couple of years on both kind of blockchains. We think there is a market for both of them, but the demand, however, depends on the need of the market, what the users need. For example, privacy is something that has been underestimated a little bit on permissionless blockchains. And we think that how the market will evolve will also depend on further technological evolution. Will the market be able to find an ideal privacy component or a knowledge proof, etc.? Will they be able to apply them in a seamless way on certain blockchains? How will digital identity be developed? Can you integrate that for example, a seamless verifiable credential, seamless whitelisting for transactions? So I'm very curious to see how the market will further develop. Obviously, no crystal ball there. But until, so very curious to further monitor the market, to further monitor the technology evolutions. And in the meantime, as mentioned, where we see value, we will issue a stablecoin.
So pretty easy, client demand driven, right? And I think that's also interesting when we look, for example, at how Kinexys did that, because I think the volumes currently are also very interesting, and they also seem to go where, you know, the customer interest is, where use case lies and interest is, and then they go into there. So I think it's a smart approach. And but Jan, from your, so I understand you are basically neutral from a stablecoin perspective. Now asking you from your ING blockchain background perspective, what do you think about these infrastructures? So would you still say, you know, there is place for both, for permission and permissionless? It depends on the use case. Or, you know, maybe you have some lessons learned from all the work you did in the past 9 years on these initiatives.
As mentioned, you need to build a blockchain which your clients trust. For example, if banks, for interbank settlement, I cannot imagine that that's in the current state, the current privacy state, etc., of public blockchains, that banks would use public blockchains for interbank settlements now. So if you look at the various solutions that are currently being built, Finality, etc., these are still on permissioned blockchains. Certain other parties, retail or even corporates, could move towards public blockchains, etc., because of their requirements. I do see that openness is super important. So by design, I would prefer to have public blockchains and to have all parties linked towards, because this is a network play. All parties will need to share the same ledger, but there are certain requirements that certain parties might have with regards to privacy, etc., which will need to be baked in. So public blockchain, where everybody is on, but where there are some components with regards to privacy, meeting AML requirements, etc., so that regulators and banks can meet regulatory requirements, that will need to be baked into those systems. And I'm sure the markets will move
I'm really curious to see what the market progress will be on these privacy-preserving technologies, because, I mean, zero-knowledge proofs are out now for a while, and there are so many great innovation in the, you know, L1, L2, space here. So I'm really curious to see if this tech capabilities will be set up in a way that they can also really comply with the regulatory stuff and make banks and other companies use it. So yeah, definitely with you. We should monitor that. And I'm also personally working a lot on the topic of digital identity as well. And here, of course, also a lot of potential now is coming with verifiable credentials, right? Making experiences seamless when it comes to payment, when it also comes to identification, authorization, authentication. So yeah, I think pretty exciting future ahead. And you mentioned, Jan, and this is kind of the one of the last questions to you guys, you don't have the crystal ball, but still, let's now try or assume you had the crystal ball. And this question, of course, goes to both of you. If we now meet again in 5 years, and of course, I hope we do meet before, but if we look into 2030, what do you think, you know, how will the stablecoin market look like? Will there be a consolidation? Will be there myriads of stablecoins? Will maybe stablecoins issue even have access to central bank money? Will we, you know, not talk about stablecoins anymore because they will just be widely accepted? You know, what's your perspective on maybe from 5 years from now? Where do we stand?
Yeah, maybe if I go first, So 5 years from now, we believe there will be indeed multiple digital payment instruments side by side, each with their own sets of use cases. So the Bank Consortium stablecoin, so our stablecoin will be there. Next to that, there will be tokenized deposits developed by banks. And there will be the also CBDC one from the ECB. And each will serve its own specialized sets of use cases, we believe. And also 5 years from now, what we think will happen is that all the, by then the banks in Europe, but also across the world, is the development we now see, will be offering digital asset products and digital payments to their clients. So offering wallets, offering custody, offering tokenized security settlement, offering tokenized real world assets, et cetera, et cetera. The promise behind these developments has been there for quite a long time. But yeah, really, if banks put their shoulders behind this, and that development is now really ongoing and will be very advanced, I think, in 5 years' time, these markets, I think, will really have taken the...
Dan, what about you?
it will go like the, with any kind of innovation. You will see a wave of consolidation in stable coins. You will see the technology maturing and various parties in the industry contributing towards towards a better customer journey, which will lead towards towards further mainstream adoption. So I think blockchain will for a long time still exist. Blockchain payments and the financial transactions will for a long time still exist next to regular payment transactions. With the industry maturing, the market finding solutions for certain things, as we just mentioned, yeah, you will see an evolution there, and it will be very interesting to further monitor the whole ecosystem.
For sure. So definitely a bullishness on stablecoins, but also coexistence with other forms of money, tokenized deposits, CBDCs, and existing payment solution. That's what you're seeing in your crystal ball for 2030. Great.
Definitely. And I'm very much looking forward to do this this pod jointly. So with other banks, with other industry parties, blockchain benefits most if all parties are there, if all parties contribute, if all parties cooperate. So yeah, very eager to go on this path further in a joint way.
If I may, there's one thing maybe good to clarify and to add. So with the stablecoin, we don't have the ambition to replace the current payment infrastructure within European SEPA area, right? That is sometimes a misconception that we hear, that stablecoins, that we are developing the stablecoin really to replace anything that is already working very well right now. So that is not needed for payments in the SEPA area. That's also not what we hear our clients say to us. So we really think the stablecoin can be used for those new innovative opportunities that are much more difficult to develop right now with the existing payment infrastructure. So where you benefit from programmability, from cross-border payments, from settlement of tokenized securities, for example, other tokenized assets. So where transactions are now complex or cumbersome, there we think blockchain can provide a new solution. Where it's efficient and robust already, so there we don't want to replace that. So we don't want to use our stablecoin, for example, if you go to a supermarket tomorrow and you want to make a payment. We don't foresee that that will happen with our stablecoin, perhaps in the longer term, but that's not our ambition in the short term.
Okay, so really a coexistence of different payment solutions and the novel use cases you aim to serve that current solutions like SEPA is not serving today. And I really liked what you said, Jan, also on the cooperational approach, because so often I think one of the key issues in payments is that so many folks work in silos. So it's really great to see that you made it work to get all these key players sitting on the same table, setting up an entity and working on that. And yeah, and you know, if now people listen from any other of these 9 countries and wants to join, they should reach out to you, I guess. And even if they are from the 9 countries, you know, there is still room to cooperate, if I understood you guys correctly. Yeah.
In every forum, in every conference that I go to, you come along with parties that say, wow, you guys are doing this from industries where we never knew that that parties were trying to solve certain inefficiencies via certain applications. So yeah, happy to keep them coming and to continue those discussions.
So maybe to wrap this episode up, is there anything I did not ask but I should have asked, which you would like to share with our audience?
Well, Jonas, maybe interesting for the audience is that so we had our first press release end of September, where we announced the collaboration, but we did not announce various other topics. As Floris mentioned, we are now getting our management in place. We did not yet reveal our the name of the entity, although we already have this approved within the industry or within the consortium. So there will be another press event beginning of December where we announce all these things. So management and finally the big reveal of the name together with also a website that we are working on, etc. So from that point in time, the public, the audience can have somewhere to search for our initiative and also can put a name with not a face, but with a whole.
That's
entity.
Good. Yeah, that's really good. Thanks for sharing this, Jan, because I think a name will help a lot, right? For referencing also the initiative and not just talking about this bank consortia stablecoin, but have a name to that. So thanks for sharing that. And maybe whenever this is announced, feel free to share this with me as well. So then we can forward this also to our dear listeners in the networks we have been building up. Cool. Then Yeah, I think thanks so much, Jan. Thanks, Floris, for being with us here today. It was really great to learn more about your stablecoin, and we look forward to seeing, you know, what's next, how the market develops, also how everything works with the licensing, with the rollout the next year. So definitely the invite to come back, and thanks again for being with us today.
It was our pleasure. Happy to stay in touch and to further monitor jointly. The further evolutions.
Definitely.
Thanks, Jonas.
And thanks so much also, dear listeners, for listening to this episode. You made it until the end. So, of course, if you like the podcast, please subscribe to this podcast. Please share the episodes with your colleagues, friends who you think are interested in the future of money. Leave a review on the podcast player of your choice. You know, we are everywhere to find and help us just drive further education around digital money and the future of finance. So this is Bitcoin Fiat Rock and Roll. Thanks so much for listening, and see you next time. Bye-bye.
The views expressed are solely the personal opinions of the hosts and are provided for informational purposes only. This podcast does not offer financial or investment advice. Always conduct your own research and make well-informed decisions before investing. Please be aware that the hosts and guests may hold cryptocurrencies or digital assets discussed in this episode.